Welcome to Dealing, the Butter Lane Antiques podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Monty.
And together we run Butter Lane Antiques. We are your hosts of today's episode.
So this podcast is about the world of antique jewellery, specifically online dealing. It's what we like to think of as the other side of antiques. You know, you have the big things, cupboards and tables and chairs.
Cupboards.
And then on the other side you have jewellery, the little beautiful pieces of art that we deal in. We're going to talk about Butter Lane, how we built the brand from scratch 7 years ago, and you're also going to get to know the two of us. As individuals, we like to keep a fairly low profile online and on social media, so this is our platform where we're going to tell our own stories. I alluded to the spoiler in the last episode. It's a pretty crazy ride. We're going to get into the catastrophic event maybe next week.
So this episode, episode two, is going to give you more of an insight into behind the scenes at Butter Lane. It's going to tell you some great stories, some of our big sales and our really memorable, you know, days in the office, which, you know, is what this has become. However, along with that,
hand on heart,
you know, there's also been some pretty big mistakes along the way.
Yeah, I'm not too big.
I'm probably
still here.
Yeah, you know, yeah, we are still here. Yeah, absolutely. But you know, just a behind the scenes, an insight, personal insight into
who we are and what we do.
Yeah, a young, fresh business that started from nothing to where we are now.
So in the last episode, obviously, we discussed about how we started the very early days on eBay, taking a leap from 99p auctions into the world of e-commerce. We began dealing more to the trade and trying to build up a customer base for a more retail-orientated business. Okay, so let's move into the beginning of how the new strategy went for us. As you can imagine, with all new business ventures, it takes time, patience, and, as you said, importantly, some mistakes to learn from.
I'm already not liking the way mistakes is being geared towards me.
Well, I mean, but, I think the fact that we're sat here now together, the business is still going, means that mistakes haven't been too bad. Nothing we couldn't weather through.
You know, pretty fucking stressful, if I'm honest. But
so in the beginning, it was a steep learning curve for both of us. I'd say that's probably fair to say. On my end, it was getting to grips with the jewelry itself, the history, stones and metals, styles, periods, along with the general day-to-day running of an online retailer, creating listings, shipping the goods, customer service, accounts. Office administration, accounts, exactly. I studied music at university, a completely different ballpark, musical composition and digital performance specifically. So I was already, I guess, quite computer savvy and used to working on my own in sort of intensive, larger scale composition projects. I guess this must have come across to you, Alex, as the first task you assigned me was to build a new website, something I'd dabbled a little bit in the past, but not very much. And sort of along with that came improving the images and the presentation of the jewelry to put onto this new site. So you sort of showed me a few that you liked, a few other antique dealers, a few other websites that you know, had a nice aesthetic, and then you pretty much just left me to get on with it, really.
Without saying the word, you know, copy this. It was,
well,
use this as inspiration.
Inspiration, yeah. Standing on the shoulder of giants, is that what they say?
I think so, but I mean,
that was Newton, I think.
Yeah.
So,
Newton, I don't know.
Yeah. Getting the jewelry to look good wasn't the biggest challenge at this point. It's obviously, you know, a very visual thing and tactile, and you were buying beautiful pieces of jewelry, so they kind of spoke for themselves. But creating an e-commerce website with checkout experience and card processing and linking it into all the payment gateways and things, as well as integration with the eBay database that we're using, was somewhat tricky. I mean, all the boring behind-the-scenes stuff is what I had to sort of learn how to do. But I think it looked good in the end, the first website.
Yeah, it was class. I mean, it wasn't totally original, but it was...
Yeah.
It was...
Put our own stamp on
amazing,
it.
Amazing, yeah.
And through
it was user friendly. We actually kept that as though
people were able to go through and buy things on it.
Yeah, it worked.
Which is something.
I wouldn't like to go back and try and build one now from scratch the way we did then.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was building a raw website on a a graphics program.
Yeah, it was one
crazy
one.com's graphical interface.
It was before you had what we call what you see is what you get.
Absolutely.
You know, programs where you could use a shopping cart or use a program that's already sort of designed in a way to look like an online shop. It was get to, you know, start from the basics with pencil and paper and draw it out and then try and code on the machine to make it look. And I tell you what, wow, amazing.
I mean, I don't want to go back there. Late nights and a lot of coffee. So through populating the website with stock.
Was it coffee that you, was that your, was that, is that what you used?
Coffee and cigarettes, yeah. Through populating the website with the stock inventory that we had, I was also able to learn about the stuff. So in that respect, you know, I was kind of two birds with one stone there. So the website and the logo, do you remember that first logo that we had? Remember the B and the L and the little cow at the bottom?
Do we not? Oh my, I was just thinking, do we not still have that?
No, it was a big B and a sort of L that was like linked into it. Like if you imagine
That was
the New York Yankees cap.
Okay.
Two letters on it. Little cow at the bottom. Tiffany designed the New York Yankees logo. Did you know that?
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, cool. I'd love to research more into that.
Standing on the shoulder of giants.
Well, standing on the shoulder of Tiffany's.
Indeed. So the website and the logo, that was our first step towards building a brand. But the backbone of the business at that time and for the next couple of years, post the New York trip and closing down the eBay account, was, of course, the trade list. We touched upon the trade list last week. The trade list was a group of around, eventually about 30 trade contacts, mostly in the States.
All but one or two, really.
All but one or two in the States. Some of whom you had met when you were over there with Beth. Some of whom we had approached online, and we would, anytime we got fresh stock in,
sneak peek,
get it photographed, brief descriptions, and stick it on an email, which was then fired out to this small group of trade contacts. So you would come back from, for example, Kempton around 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and we would work for as long as it took that night to get everything photographed, measured, described, put on the list, and the goal being by the next morning, we'd have taken 10 grand and, you know, that would have been a good start into clearing those checks out for the next 3 days.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't like to go back to those days. Exactly. It was more of the pressure was on, you know, but when you got back and the payments had been promised, it was...
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you'd written the checks, pen.
In the early days, despite what people may think, there was no money whatsoever. There was no backing. There was no investment. It was go to a market with 10, go to the market with a load of confidence and stick your neck, put your neck on the line.
10 grand in the bank, spend 20.
10 grand in the bank, spend 35.
Spend 35.
And hope for the best. Hope the trade list did well.
Yep. And then we met Lenore.
Lenore, who is a total legend. Mm-hmm. Who was a total legend, sorry. Unfortunately, she passed away recently.
Auntie Lenore.
Auntie Lenore, yeah. That's what she used to call herself to me. But she taught me a lot, actually, because she was a very big stickler for condition and things that I really, really had to consider in buying.
Yeah.
Because
very particular about the goods that she wanted to then sell on. It had to be 100% right. Yeah. We call them Lenore pieces.
Lenore, yeah.
Is this definitely Lenore piece?
Yeah. Would your auntie be happy with this?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Lenore, she'd be very happy with it.
So Lenore was really our first big spender.
Yeah, she was like, that was they were amazing those days. When the pressure was on, she had the power,
yeah,
you know, the power to relieve the pressure if
There were three
if
pieces.
If we caught her at the right time. You know.
Three pieces in particular I can remember selling to Lenore. And the first couple of parcels that we sold to Lenore, they were, you know, compared to what we were used to, a lot of money. And our payment processor had a limit of £5,000. So we had to send her like three invoices just to clear off one of these parcels because
actually,
it was tripping
we
our
limit.
We
were using external payment. We were using things like Etsy payments.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah, at the beginning
up,
we were using Etsy.
Private listings.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first two incredible pieces of jewelry that she bought were a cross-hatched snake ring, black cross-hatched enameling. It dated off the top of my head to about 1785, thereabouts. And the quality was phenomenal. 18 karat gold, you know, all hand done, hand enameled.
I remember I bought it off, actually.
Big lump of a thing. And on the inside was an engraving. It was a memorial piece.
Dedication.
A dedication, yeah. It would have been given to a very close friend or probably relative at the funeral in the will. And it was Rothschild. It was engraved with a Rothschild, which... I mean, I dread to think what we sold that piece of jewelry for.
Undersold. That's the first thing that came to my head. Oh.
It was worth a lot of money. And that was together in a parcel with the Brahma key ring.
The Brahma key. That's still knocking around, actually.
Is it?
I've seen it. I've seen that in the past 6 months pop up.
Really?
On Insta. Not for sale, in someone's...
personal collection?
Yeah.
Wow. So it was a signet ring with, on the face of the signet ring... a Brahma key, which would sort of swivel out and you would use it to open a jewelry box or there's sort of a barrel-shaped key with little teeth at the end. And the ring itself was completely covered in sort of floral engraving, chased detailing.
Chased, yeah.
It was big as well. Really, really nice quality.
It was nice. It would actually be intended for the head housekeeper or whatever the situation was at the time, who would be the only person had access to the jewelry safe. Yeah.
I didn't know
it's
that.
Really interesting. I'd love to locate that if we could somehow, like,
yeah.
I don't know if that could get back, not to buy, but just to see where it's ended up.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Amazing. It was an incredible. And we have had things with Brahma keys
subsequently,
since,
yeah.
brooches and bits and pieces, but
nothing of that
nothing
quality.
Like the ring. The ring was amazing.
And the other piece I'll never forget was that Victorian turquoise double heart. The turquoise had little diamond set crowns on top of them. Persian turquoise, you know, again, of the highest quality. But on the inside of the shank was the inscription, 7 men died for these stones. And do you remember at the time, we did some research into it and there was a robbery in a big jewellery store in central London in, I think it was the 1870s or 1860s maybe. And the stones had been taken, stolen by a group of, I don't know, whoever.
Bandits.
Men had been killed on both sides, police, etc. Eventually the stones had been recovered and set into this ring, commemorated by this inscription. And, you know, it's things like that. Pieces with that kind of story,
yeah,
and history.
Yeah, great history,
that,
yeah.
You know, you'll never see anything like that again. It's amazing.
That was cool. I remember where both the pieces you've mentioned, I remember buying both of them. So yeah. They've stayed with me as well, you know.
Yeah, because this was
it's 2014, not just a case
2014,
that,
2015. This was like...
This was the early days. This was the
proper
This was the front days, you know.
These
no
for
money,
us,
no
we never
money.
Sold things of this value no. before. It was crazy. And,
no. and
straight to Lenore.
That was actually when we really started to realise, wow, you know, we're onto this is amazing. You know, we have access to all this stuff down in London.
Yeah,
and there's a huge market for it.
Yeah.
Overseas, and we were selling to the trade.
Yeah, that's the point. At this stage, then trade is our backbone, and we could reliably, you know, sell 50% of the pieces that same day that you'd purchased them, or that mm-hmm. same night, to this trade contact. It was, you know, it kept our cash flow going basically whilst.
Kept us, you know, in people's good books, I think. Kept the checks clear, kept the wages paid.
Yeah, well, whilst at the same time we were developing this, you know, brand, retail.
Yeah,
line.
which was going on in the background at the
Absolutely.
Time, you know, behind the scenes.
Absolutely, yeah. Just to make it clear, these pieces would never have been published live, you know, to the public on Instagram. The trade list was purely private.
Yeah, because it was we were essentially... selling to people that were then going to be selling
exactly
through Instagram or through their own channels, the big shows in the States.
The difficult part of it was that we had all this amazing stuff
that we wanted to show off,
that we wanted to put on our Instagram, but
yeah, look what we found.
But half of them did never get there. Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the beauty of it. There was, I remember one time, sorry to interrupt you, talking about amazing pieces. When we were working on Butterlane in the very early days, one piece in particular that we kept aside for us that didn't go on the trade list.
I think I know what you're going to say here.
The Medusa Signet, the Bloodstone with the really intricate...
Incredible carving.
Intaglio, yeah. And you could see the snake, the individual snakes. Mm-hmm. It was incredible.
In her hair, yeah. And the ring mount as well was amazing as well.
Yeah, it was a great quality piece. And that sale in particular was one that I really stayed with me. Because that's when I think something just started to twig a bit in me that, hold on, like we can get the money. Take money out of it. We have the market ourselves.
We can sell to the end customer.
So, and ultimately, it's not a problem. It is about money. You know, we can say that. So we were, what we would say, the saying, knocking things out. So
to the trade.
To the trade, sticking very small profits on
5%,
7%. To be able to just turn it over, so the cash flow wasn't as affected. You know, it's basically so we could afford these. You know, we had to sell them quick, which meant we couldn't afford to them not to sell. So we had to ask the right money to leave profit for somebody else. So then, the Medusa ring. Sorry to go off topic. I remember where we were. We were in the cafe that had opened over the road.
Yeah. Washway Road.
Clean cafe that was doing healthy food. Mm-hmm. And we were sat there chatting away, and we used to have the ka-ching on the phone when something sold.
Cash register. Yeah, I forgot about that. That was good.
Oh my God, it was so tacky. I wonder if I could pull that up, that noise. I'll be able to find it somewhere. And I remember sitting and phone ka-ching, and we'd retailed this piece. It was probably one of the first retail sales.
That was one of the first big sales.
I can't remember the profit. It was...
It sold for thousands of pounds.
Yeah, thousands of pounds. And
it had gone onto Instagram it must have been about 45 minutes before, because I'd post it on Instagram and then we'd like, right, let's go and get some lunch.
Yeah, let's go and get some lunch.
Went across the road, sold like that off the bat. I mean, I don't say how many followers we had at the time, maybe 10,000 or something on Instagram. We just didn't, stuff never sold that quickly to begin with.
No,
and something of that value that we'd taken a punt on. Yeah, it was great.
It wasn't a punt, was it?
It wasn't a punt, no. It was a turning point. It was just a big moment.
Like the light bulb moment.
Yes.
You know, like, hold on, we're onto something here. We could do this.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think that was very important. That sale itself was important to being able to focus more on Butterlane.
Yeah.
And
some faith in the brand, isn't it?
And then as we were able to focus more on that, it then started to properly grow, because we were supplying it with the best things that we were finding, rather than selling them onto the trade.
We weren't just showing 100% of the new stock to the trade.
Exactly,
we were putting stuff to one side and saying, no, we'll retail.
What was happening with the trade list? Anything that was good was selling. Anything that was the right money was gone.
And we were left with
left with the crap. Sorry to say
Instagram.
That word, because it wasn't crap, but we were left with, you know, the rubbish stock.
Absolutely.
At the end that was a mistake, that was paid a bit too much for, or slight condition issue. And then that was what we were... But as soon as...
It took us a while to realise that.
That sounds like... It did take a while. It
took us a while for us to...
As soon as we started to have a bit more faith and a bit more confidence, a bit more money behind, you know...
Yeah,
a few months' wages covered in the bank. If we didn't sell anything for a few months, you know, we're not going to starve. The rent's paid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just the early days. I guess I just went into mistakes, which.
Okay. Yeah.
Is something
we're gonna talk about the mistakes. So I'm going to pass this one over to you, Alex. You
thanks, mate. You talk about all the amazing victories, and I'll talk about, you know...
Suits me, sir.
Yeah, the really, really horrible times.
Okay, so go on. Give me a couple of of stories that have taught you lessons over the years?
I mean, it's still something that goes on today, but I remember it's something my dad told me. You can't take your foot off the pedal, son. You know, this with this business, it needs constant stock. It needs, the stock needs replenishing.
Fresh stock.
All the time. And we notice that now.
Still now, yeah, absolutely. It's very, very sensitive.
So if you want me to specifically talk about mistakes.
But let's keep it anonymous, shall we?
Yeah, I'm not going to say any names.
Don't say any names. Okay.
Overextension. But actually, it's largely responsible for this, for Butter Lane's success, I think. And I think the way I was back then, when I just used to go mad and overspend, gave us a great stock.
Just buying anything that was put in front of you, if it was the right thing.
If it was the right thing,
if there's money in the bank, if there's no money in the bank, I'll buy it anyway.
Yeah, because I knew that morally, I was always going to honour a payment. If it was going to take a couple of weeks...
You might not have told them that, though. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I probably might not have told them. No, it was always done. You know, I was fine. I was friendly with everyone, obviously. And,
yeah,
So overextension. So specific. I know what you're referring to.
I think a
few people know what we're talking about.
I can remember a particular story. But
walking into someone's office in central London, who we were in the early stages of what will be a great relationship. Mm-hmm. With a budget in mind.
And you had a budget in mind.
I think we did have a budget in mind.
I was shocked when I learned the budget on the taxi from the station to their offices.
Okay, so that's how considered it was.
So we did have a budget in mind technically, but...
Yeah, and the budget... Anyway, I was on... Sometimes I say, internally we have a sort of thing that I can be on one where if I'm going for it, and it doesn't happen a lot, but I was... decided this day that there was going to be no stopping me with buying jewellery. And that whatever I got put in front of, oh yeah, we can sell that. We've got this market. How long ago was this, just to think of?
This was about 12 months ago.
12 months.
Recent
history. So it's not an early mistake. It's a mistake that I'm still clawing on my way out of, actually.
Yeah.
The stock keeps coming. I'm just... totally wild, just okay, yeah, that's fine. We can sell this. Bang, 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 go, go. Yeah. You were checking things for me because obviously I couldn't use my other arm.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that another time. And we were both involved, actually. I don't want to take 100% responsibility. Everyone knew what was going on.
Well, I'll interject there because you were presented with the pieces. You were saying you had a pile for yeses and a pile for noes, and you were going through those yeses piles. And I thought these were provisional yeses. So I thought they were like, we'll put these to one side and then we'll find the prices out and we'll come back and we'll go through them again. But no, actually it was, we'll put these to one side and I will definitely buy them regardless of anything. So you'd racked up a big spend. And I was expecting to go through that.
And then it sort of got to like the awkward point where, you know,
total it up.
Yeah, I think I went outside, you know, went outside for a few moments and come back in, and then it was like, I could tell because the lady's face was beaming. I think, you know, this was like a fourth, fifth generation company.
Yeah.
That had been going since
the
late 19th century. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think she actually said, wow, we've never had someone spend like that. And I was like, right, well, I'll get...
What kind of terms can you give me then? Three months?
So we sat down. I won't go into the numbers, but the balance was five times the original budget. And it was crazy. And I had to put my game face on and be like, oh, yeah, it's fine. And I think Monty was, well, you were there. What were you thinking at this time?
We're talking
like almost, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds over of what we'd intend. It was crazy. It was so silly. And then, sorry, you say, what did you feel? Because I've just interrupted you. I've asked you a question, then interrupted you. I'm getting too excited. It's bringing back all the emotions.
I was quite shocked at the amount that you intended to spend. But, you know, they were willing to work with us, give us terms. So we essentially broke it down. We're going to pay you back X amount every week. And that would have been fine if we'd not continued to buy stock for the next 6 months afterwards.
Yeah, but very poor management of the funds, as the goods sold was the mistake.
But that didn't happen. So we ended up in a position where we'd, you know, put the whole lot online, and still had quite a big bill at the end of it to pay and no more fresh stock to use.
No.
And it was
I'd spend all the money.
In fairness, it was beautiful things, you know, like top-notch antiques.
But exactly, I remember the next day when the accountant... Did we talk about the accountant?
No.
It was in the pilot, wasn't it?
Yeah. So this was off the
back accountant was like, fucking hell, Alex. Like, we've just told you to, you know, you need to...
Reduce your stock figure
down and work on the bloody bank balance, mate.
And you go back and increase the stock figure by about a third the next day.
Oh, it was wild, yeah. And I had to go, I was really, really backed against the wall there with you and him. And I remember being like, I got sort of really defensive and being like, I tell you both, that is the best thing I've ever done for this business. And Lukey was like, mate, you're probably going to go under with this decision. You got some serious work to do here.
He did say that, yeah.
And I was like, you know.
And it took you a while, but eventually you did come around to accepting that was a mistake, because you're talking about it now in the mistakes category, so...
It was a mistake. It's different in this business because overextension spend of... The stock doesn't eat anything. The stock has an intrinsic value.
It does.
A 4-carat diamond ring, okay, it's a lot of money for us to buy, but we can sell it, and it's not going to go out of date. It's not going to, you know, we're not ever going to get to a point where we're going to have to throw this stuff away. It maintains
absolutely
the value.
There's more value in a 4-carat diamond ring than having the cash in the
bank. Yeah, of course there is. Yeah, I mean, it's the age-old problem with this business. I think at most people that I speak to that deal just. The traders dealing will always say, you know, oh, cash flow will get, you know, watch the cash, money, be careful with the cash flow. And it really is difficult, you know. I think we're better now, but, you know, that mistake didn't help. That was a big learning curve.
Well, no, I think that mistake did help.
It's been fun to get out of it.
Absolutely.
It's a process, isn't it? You know, we've learned a lot and, you know, we're back to, you know, we're in these guys' good books again. We've not said any names.
Yeah.
So
we got through it.
The mistakes in the... that wasn't the early days, but mistakes in the very early days were, in my memory, were always financial and not managing the situations properly. One thing springs to mind. Again, I'll keep it anonymous.
Yes.
Not answering my phone, avoiding people that... We're chasing for money.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone that is listening that is in the trade will be sort of like,
yeah,
of course, you know. And someone actually turned up at our old offices ready to, you know, what's the saying? Punch my face in.
Oh, is that
so? Yeah, so you were on holiday, I think. I was on my own. I was with Dan Chad at the time.
I was on holiday.
You were away. And it was... really, really angry. And I think in those days, I didn't actually know how to handle the pressure. It was too quick. It was too fast.
You'd been swerving his calls and he just showed up?
Near enough, yeah, I'd say so. But I didn't handle it properly. Yes. I was aggressive. He was aggressive. It became into a battle of wills, you know,
shouting match.
He just got messy, didn't he? So I apologize. I held my hands up and said, whoa, like, that was so out of order. That is, you know, and actually those people, that mistake, are great contacts now. And also
we've got a good relationship with them, really regular good. Suppliers.
Yeah, we see them every week.
Yeah.
But I think to just talk a bit deeper into a
particular situation in the car park, right?
Yeah, but that was me being a prick. Like that was not good. That is not a showcase of me. I don't want to talk
about that. We're talking about mistakes.
Okay.
So you went to the bank and got the money.
Well, not...
Or some of it.
Not exactly
as much as was in there.
To my bank, you know. and then pulled up into the car park in my probably, I don't know, 2-litre car at the time. Too fast. And then
the A-class.
Got out of the car and was, you know, stormed over, like, here's your bloody money that I owe you, if you're going to do this. And let go of it before it was secured in the person's hand. And God, at that time, sent me a big gust of wind. And it was, I don't know, you know, there was thousands of pounds all over the floor. But I think we need to say that going from those mistakes.
Yes.
You know, we're up at millions of pounds turned over annually. Mm-hmm. And it was those things in the early days that were so important to...
For shaping the...
For learning from.
Approach,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, having that amazing stock in the early days that got us this huge growth.
Yeah.
Which essentially did happen overnight. You know, it was so fast.
Yeah.
It wasn't a gradual... I mean, we do grow annually. We, as you know, I micromanage the finances mm-hmm. now and the growth and the numbers of what's going on in the sales. But it was just a crazy, crazy period those first few years.
Absolutely.
When we were growing.
And I think the crux of it really is having cash in the bank, you're not working it. But if it is in stock,
it's working, yeah.
That's potential. So that leads to more stock. And when you sell through it, that leads to more
everything,
stock.
Everything's invested. Every penny is reinvested. It still is.
I mean, I think that personally, I would...
It's a bit different now, but it's generally.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm more conservative than you. You're more willing to go out spending. I'm not going to say reckless. Well, yeah, in the early days, it was recklessly. But that's like you said, that's why we're here today. Because you were prepared to go out on a limb, take the risks, secure the stock.
I think it was probably a lifestyle thing at the time.
Paid for it all in the end.
Yeah, I was good for it. You know, I was going to pay it. It doesn't, you know, it's the money equals the stock, and we can sell. We have the platform to sell the stock.
Absolutely.
It was, you know, it was. That was the way I was looking at it, and I don't know. I think it served us good in some ways, yeah. Obviously, because we're both.
Yeah. Well, these two examples you've given of mistakes and, you know, not the best behavior with suppliers, etc. We've come out of both of
that's
them.
Like, that's
the
getting too emotional. That's
with
being
a good
too,
relationship with those.
Yeah, stars, that's so. Being too not being in control of myself enough. Whereas
right, absolutely.
Now I am so more self-aware.
Yeah.
You know, just as a you know correction, being. Please don't judge me. You know, I have it down myself. I know when I'm getting on one, as I've referred.
Yeah.
And I know that if I'm getting on one, sometimes it's worth just not taking that meeting that day if I'm feeling.
Yeah.
It's been too emotional. It's been too. It's, you know.
It's being in your 20s and you're in your 30s now.
Possibly. It'd be too young, too much, too much money, too much fun.
Yeah.
Too much side activity going on, which was not good for my mind. You know, probably referring to my personal life or sure. Whatever I was getting up to at the time, which we'll go into another time, not now.
I think the next episode we might touch on some of that stuff. Yeah.
So, my turn, mate. Are you ready?
I'm as ready as I was
last week.
So your question.
So my question, which, as you know, Monty hit me with last week, which was the same question I'd asked him in the pilot.
Not unfair.
Totally unrehearsed, put him on the spot. My question to Monty today, which is intended to get to know him a little more on a personal note or bit more. What did you say last week? That was a really good thing. Like, bit more behind your psyche.
Into your mind. Delve into your mind.
Okay, well, it's a compliment. And, you know, it's also to put him on the spot. But obviously now I don't mean this in that in a flippant way. I have taught you everything you know. But I have, together, you have learned a tremendous amount of skills.
Yep.
So the big question.
Go on.
What's stopping you going on your own?
Oh, wow.
And as a further point, where do you see yourself in 10 years? If I mean, you could really like reverse it down and tell me, well, actually, there was something I wanted to tell you, mate. Probably not a good idea for the cameras.
Yeah, wow, okay. Why do I not go on my own?
Do you see yourself ever doing that? You know, you've got enough knowledge now, you could do that.
Okay, simple answer to the last question. Do I ever see myself going on my own? Yes.
Ooh, we'll talk about this later.
Why have I not gone on my own already?
Because you've had a six-figure salary and a great life.
Yeah, all right. I mean, I don't intend in the near future or the medium-term future to go it alone, go on, you know, start up on my own. The main reason, there's two fundamental reasons. The first fundamental reason is that I love my job and I really enjoy coming to work every day. And we have a laugh, we have a good time, we have fun, we, you know, it's interesting. I learn new things every day being in the office with you. And I don't know. I mean, hats off to you. Working at Butterline Antiques is a blast. It's great fun. You pay me well. I have a good salary. And as an employee, then I'm not the one that has to be worried about, you know,
paying the
stressful financial side of it. I mean, you know, there's two of us. So to a point, I do worry about that sometimes.
And actually,
you're the owner of the business.
And which will what? What did you say then at the end?
You're the owner of the business. So at the end of the day, the buck stops with you.
We treat my way of managing Butterlane has been whatever I allow for myself or do myself.
Yeah.
You get the same, you know. I want to pay a rise, you get a pay rise. Mm-hmm. I want to take money to go on a shopping spree, you get money to go on a shopping spree.
I get a little bonus.
Yeah, or, you know, whatever you want to do with it. You don't want to go and buy clothes. You know, I do want to go and buy clothes, you don't.
Sure.
Different people.
I want to buy telescopes and
Monty wants to buy geek stuff, but cool.
But yeah, I mean, basically, you've really incentivized me to stay through, you know, financially and just by being a good boss and a good friend and making the working environment somewhere that it's a pleasure to come every day. And that, you know, that's on you. The secondary reason, I suppose, is that where I am in life right now with a young daughter and another on the way,
he's announced it to the world.
Then being in a salaried job,
you've got security, don't you?
Exactly. Compared to being
starting self-employed, from scratch could be, you would go,
it's a huge risk, isn't it?
Or it's not a risk because you know what you're doing.
Well, it's a bigger risk than I'm in.
Would it take off?
Sure.
I tell you, exactly. That's something I've considered before. And maybe it's something we'll discuss in the future.
Mm.
What would we advise? Would you recommend people going into the business now? We will discuss it in part two because, you know, I wouldn't like to start in this game now.
I know, right?
Starting in the online game.
Starting from scratch.
Okay, it would be easier to build a website. We wouldn't have to code by, you know, pencil and paper and candlelight.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's more and more sellers in the market and it's becoming more and more competitive.
Absolutely.
I see competition as a way of pushing us. I welcome competition.
You've always welcomed it.
You know, one lad at the moment who is doing really, really well, who, you know, Sul.
Yeah.
Sullivan.
Right, Sully, yeah, of course.
Yeah, like he's absolutely clearing up. He's doing really well and actually reminds me of a young Mr.
Alfieri.
No, just really good, really personable, appears to be brave.
Yep.
In it with his dad,
yep.
Which obviously isn't us.
Has brought the business online.
My dad. Yeah, he's done his own Instagram thing. He's a good lad. We have a good chat. We do a lot of business, actually.
Yeah,
I won't
nice
tell
stock.
You who he works for because he's my
he nice
secret
stock.
Customer. Secret supplier. But yeah, Sully. Top boy. If you're listening. I'm sure he will be listening, actually.
I'd like to think so. And on that note, thank you for listening.
Is that us? Are we done?
Well, that's
wow,
us.
It flies that by, doesn't us. It? It's crazy.
So next week, we are going to dive into Alex's backstory. Now, I'll warn you, it's going to get a bit dark at times next week. Not exclusively dark, but...
Not backstory as in... You mean like...
I mean...
You mean...
The
well,
catastrophic
I think you mean,
event, yeah.
The big event.
The big event. The big so event. There are quite a few twists and turns, needless to say. You have a solid understanding of who we are now, and we can start to make things a little bit more personal. So please do...
Get your popcorn.
Join us. We release episodes every Tuesday. Follow us on Spotify and subscribe if you listen on Apple Music. Please leave us a review. It makes a difference. Follow us on Instagram, Butterline Antiques. And of course, as ever, do check out our new acquisitions on www.butterlaneantiques.com.
Shameless advertising.
That's a plug.
That is a plug.